When we last spoke in 2002, Shrek 2 was still in your future, as was Sinbad, Veronica Guerin, and Man on Fire, among many, many other scores. Now, what factors dictate the approach that you're going to take to a particular score?
Well, I think really just it's all about the movie, isn't it? And now one doesn't sit down before one sees a movie and decide on a certain direction. Obviously, as a film composer, one's totally guided by the images in front of you, and I think for me, over the last few years, making sure that I do a variety of work, which means that stylistically I'm always kind of ducking and diving and out of the frying pan into the fire, which is really exciting, and it keeps it all fresh, and each movie seems to be a completely new challenge to me. I can't think of, apart from say Shrek and Shrek 2, which clearly are brother and sister, of all the movies I've done, they're also very different and require such different things from the score. I never quite know what I'm letting myself into until I see the first cut of a film, and then usually there's a moment of panic, followed by quite a long period of controlled sort of calm and trying to understand what my role might be and could be and what I might aim for.
Now, going back to 2003, what considerations go into your score when composing a film for a real-life person? In this case, let's say Veronica Guerin.
Well, that was marvelous for me because I had read about Veronica Guerin, a few years before, about her story and how tragically she was murdered by the people that she was reporting on, and her bravery. But with that movie, it was really exciting because, as you can hear, I'm quite English, but what was required was a very an Irish-influenced score, since the thing takes place in Dublin, involves Dublin inhabitants. It was really exciting for me because I'd long wanted to experiment in that genre, and what turned out to be a really exciting beginning of a relationship with Joel Schumacher. But I've always found with these things, if I think too much about the fact that perhaps they could have hired like an Irish composer, I start to get very nervous, and I just try and be myself, and with something like that, sprinkle a little of what I perceive to be an Irish influence on my score. And often what I'm really driving at is not an authenticity, but to try and get to the heart of the emotional content of the film.
Now, there is also a cue on the Veronica Guerin soundtrack called Bad News, performed by Brian O'Donnell.
Yes.
Now, I know the story behind this. I was reading the liner notes. But for those that that don't know the story, could you kind of give them the sort of the background behind this
well,
particular...
Yeah, I when I first met with Joel Schumacher, and he... I guess took the plunge to hire me because we hadn't met each other before, and although I knew his work, I don't know that he necessarily knew mine, but for whatever reason he hired me and almost immediately took off to Dublin to shoot the movie. And I don't normally have the time or necessarily have an inclination to be on the set of a movie, but because of the geographical setting of this movie and the fact that I didn't know Joel very well, and I thought it would probably be a good idea to try to get to know him before I was actually scoring the movie, I shot over to Dublin for a few days and to see if I could get the tone of the movie, at least of what he was trying to do. And when I arrived in Dublin city centre, I heard this very plaintive child's voice singing, I guess, an Irish folk song. I realised I'd heard it 10 or 11 years before, and I used to go and visit my girlfriend from London, who was at university in Dublin. I'd been curious about it then, but hadn't thought about it since. I found the source of this rather plaintive sound, and it was a little shabby, freckled boy singing, I guess, for his supper, really. He had a bucket in front of him, and he was basically busking. And the abandon with which he threw himself into these songs was remarkable. Anyhow, I went down to the set and spent a couple of days with Joel, and I mentioned it to him and said, is this the sound of Dublin. I mean, last time I was here, I heard this sort of thing. Now, obviously not the same child. And he said, you know, I don't know, whatever you like. I mean, so I didn't have any recording equipment with me. So I returned to LA and actually got my brother to find a way of going back to Dublin and record this little boy, I mean, literally down an alleyway, singing his songs, and got the tapes back to LA, to my studio, and actually it solved a great problem for me, because the really emotional sort of montage section of this movie after Veronica is shot dead,
mm-hmm.
Although I had my thematic material together at that point in the movie, I wasn't quite sure how I wanted to score it. Everything I tried musically seemed a bit trite, and it didn't seem to have enough weight and gravitas for you know the moments after Veronica is actually murdered. And I tried just playing one of these tunes, which you know I'd found out was a you know quite a popular folk song in throughout Ireland, and accompany it with a kind of slightly off key orchestral color.
Mm-hmm.
Joel sprung up and loved it immediately, and we went out with that. To my understanding is that the little boy became a sort of minor celebrity for a while in Dublin. But it was great. It was very sort of an unusual opportunity to try and do something unexpected.
Mm-hmm. That's great. You know, it's a fantastic cue, and the whole soundtrack is marvelous, is brilliant.
Good, I'm glad you like it.
Yes. Now, in 2004, you reteamed with Tony Scott for Man on Fire. Now, does a director that you've worked with before have certain expectations when you come into a project that you've worked that?
I think in the case of Tony Scott, he probably has certain musical expectations, but he certainly has. he knows me well enough now to know that I can withstand the barrage, because Tony's a very gentle man at heart and a real artist. But the films that we've been doing together lately, Man on Fire, Spy Game, and Enemy of the State, and more recently Domino,
mm-hmm.
You know, they're kind of gnarly, and a lot of Man on Fire, he wanted the audience to be on edge a lot, and
right.
It was the way he shot it, it was the way the script was, and that was the way he wanted the music to be, and I can tell you, spending 3 or 4 months on edge is it's pretty nerve-wracking, and it's quite debilitating, really.
Oh.
Especially since I spent a huge amount of time on the final act of the movie, and in particular the final moments of the film, where the little girl played by Dakota Fanning, who we believe has been kidnapped and killed. You know, the audience would believe that's what's happened.
Mm-hmm.
It turned out not to be true, and there's a hugely emotional moment as Denzel reunites with this little girl. And it just so happened, I have a daughter about the same age who has very much the same colouring hair and eyes, and looking back on it, it was quite an agonising experience, the last few weeks of scoring that movie. Just very, you've got to be fairly robust to go through an experience like that with the style of filmmaking that that Tony has.
Right. So then you find that a score can affect you physically?
Well, yes, clearly I sort of suffer from minor exhaustion at the end, but I'm sure a lot of people do that in their jobs, but it's just a sort of emotional, if you really throw yourself into this thing, which you know, obviously I do, and I think most people do, you know, it becomes very personal, and it's quite a struggle. On Man on Fire, I'm sure there was 100 minutes of score.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a lot of score, and a lot of it quite violent and uncomfortable, and some of it really emotional and sad. So, you know, obviously if one's sort of living it, it does affect you a lot.
All right. Well, you also worked with Lisa Gerrard on The Man on Fire.
Yeah.
How did she become involved with that?
Going back to this final scene where Dakota and Denzel get reunited, I had written this music time and time again, and Tony's a very encouraging director, but very, very difficult to please. And we were very near to our deadline of having to have finished the whole film and dubbed it, and let alone scored it and completed the music. And it just wasn't quite right for him. Everything I tried, he really liked my melody, he liked my instrumentation. He felt there was just some emotional layer that was missing, and you know, I knew where he was going with that. I there was a moment where I didn't really know how to solve this. And on one of these evenings and meetings in my studio, you know, I suggested, what if we had a voice, you know, overlay what I have here? And he said, well, I think that's a great idea, but I don't want it to be a voice that singing something, you know, with any narrative. You know, it can have words, but I don't really want to understand them. I just want to feel the emotion. And Lisa popped right into my head, because Lisa sings in her own language. I mean, literally.
Right.
It's only known to Lisa. And, of course, she's capable of bringing such emotion to things. So a quick phone call to Australia, which is where she lives.
Mm-hmm.
3 or 4 days later, I'd, you know, sent her over my tracks, and given her some signposts, and received them back, and mixed it all up, and it was in the film.